I think we are all assembled and it's 5:30, so we will call to order this Monday, May 11th, 2026 meeting of the City of Madison Plan Commission. And we will start with the roll call. Director Tuttle, if you would call the roll.
All right. Good evening, everyone. Start with Alder Figueroa Cole.
House here.
Alder Uguera.
Here.
Alder Field is excused. Commissioner Bazin?
Here.
Commissioner Heck is excused. Commissioner McCahill?
Here.
Commissioner Sanders?
Here.
Commissioner Solheim?
Here.
Alternate Wisniewski? Mm-hmm. Or I should say this evening, Commissioner Wisniewski. School District Rep Chiak is excused. And Chair Ganom?
Here. Thanks. We'd like to start with information from our technical facilitator, Jesse Poole.
All right, welcome to our virtual Plan Commission meeting. If you lose connection at any point during the meeting, you can reconnect by clicking the link or calling the number in your original email. Members, if you are able, please activate your video and keep it on for the duration of the meeting. Staff, if you are able, please activate your video when you are speaking. Panelists, use the raise hand feature when you'd like to be recognized to speak, ask questions, or request a roll call vote. Lowering your hand will take you out of the queue. Members of the public who have registered to speak, the name you entered in Zoom must match the name you entered in registration. You will remain muted until called upon. The clerk will tell you when your time is up. After speaking, a member of the body may ask you a question. If you need to share documentation with the commission, please send it to the email listed in today's agenda. Chair, the floor is yours.
Thanks, Jesse. Our first agenda item is item number one, which is time for public comment regarding issues not on the formal plan commission agenda. Director Tuttle, do we have any registrants for public comment?
No, we do not.
Okay, great, thank you. Now we'll have disclosures and recusals. Do any members of the Plan Commission have any disclosures or recusals related to tonight's agenda that need to be made under the city's ethics code? Seeing none, we will move on to the minutes of our April 27th, 2026 regular meeting. Does anyone have any corrections or notes on the draft minutes that have been shared? Seeing none, could I ask for a motion and a second to approve the April 27th minutes? Alder Uguera, thank you. And Commissioner Solheim, you got in there first, so thank you. Any discussion on the motion to approve minutes? And if not, any objection to unanimous approval for last month's meeting, or sorry, our last meeting minutes from April 27th? Thank you. Those minutes are approved. We will, just to review our schedule of meetings, this is our only scheduled meeting for the month of May, but we'll make up for that in June. We have meetings on June 1st, 15th, and 29th at virtual meetings at 5:30. And then we have regular meetings in July on July 13th and July 27th, which will also be regular virtual meetings at 5:30. And then we have our special in-person meeting coming up on Thursday, June 11th, and that will start at 5 p.m. in room 215 of the Madison Municipal Building at 215 Martin Luther King Boulevard. So that's our kind of business out of the way. We will now kind of go to our consent agenda for tonight's meeting. It has been the custom of the Plan Commission to handle on a consent agenda items on which staff members believe an application has been sufficiently reviewed to find the relevant standards met to support approval with all the listed conditions placed upon it by the various city departments, and where the applicant accepts all those conditions and there are no individuals who have registered to speak in opposition to the item. Separately, we will use a separate consent agenda for items requested by an applicant or city staff to be referred to a future meeting. Referral does not require a public hearing, so instead the public hearing will be held at the future date when the item is referred. So we will start with the approval consent agenda, and the items on the screen before you are items 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, 31, 32, 33, 34, 35, 36, 37, 38, 39, 40, 41, 42, 43, 44, 45, 46, 47, 48, 49, 50, 51, 52, 53, 54, 55, 56, 57, 58, 59, 60, 61, 62, 63, 64, 65, 66, 67, 68, 69, 70, 71, 72, 73, 74, 75, 76, 77, 78, 79, 80, 81, 82, 83, 84, 85, 86, 87, 88, 89, 90, 91, 92, 93, 94, 95, 96, 97, 98, 100, 101, 102, 103, 104, 105, 106, 107, 108, 109, 110, 111, 112, 113, 114, 115, 116, 117, 118, 119, 120, 121, 122, 123, 124 2, 4, 5, and 6 as being proposed to be put on the approval consent agenda. Seeing those items, does anyone have any requests for separation? Great, seeing none, we'll start with reading into the record the consent items for approval, and we'll go for a motion on that, and then we'll do a separate motion for the referral items. So item 2 is Legistar 92588 relating to 406 North Francis Street in Alder District 2. And this is consideration of a conditional use in the urban mixed use UMX district for an outdoor eating area open after 9 p.m. and consideration of a conditional use in the UMX district for an outdoor eating area with amplified sound, all to allow for an outdoor eating area for a restaurant to operate after 9 p.m. with amplified outdoor sound. Item 4 is Legistar 92756. This would recommend creating section 28.022-00751 of the Madison General Ordinances to change the zoning of property located at 7901 through 7913 East Buckeye Road and 7102 through 7270 Myack Way from a PD Plan Development District, a CCT Commercial Corridor Transitional District, and CN Conservancy District to amended PD, otherwise known as GDP, Plan Development General Development Plan District, and creating Madison General Ordinance Section 28.022-00752 to approve a specific implementation plan for these properties. And this is in Alder District 16. Item 5 and 6 are related. Item 5 is Legistar 92755. This would create Section 28.022-00750 of the Madison General Ordinances to approve an amended specific implementation plan of a plan development district for property located at 5817 Halley Way in Alder District 3. And then item 6 is Legistar 92396 relating to 5817 Halley Way in Alder District 3. And this is consideration of a conditional use in the PD Plan Development District for outdoor recreation, being a pickleball court, to serve a 5-story, 97-unit multifamily dwelling. So I will, for these consent items, I will open the public hearing and close the public hearing, and we'll move to a vote. If I could ask for a motion and a second to approve the consent agenda. Alder Uguerre, thank you. Alder Figueroa-Cole, thank you. So we have a motion and a second on the consent items. Is there any objection to unanimous approval for these items? And seeing no raised hands, the consent agenda is passed. The approval consent agenda is passed. Now we have one item on consent for referral. That's item 7 on our agenda, which is Legistar 91511 relating to 2010 through 2030 Pennsylvania Avenue and 1902 East Johnson Street in Urban Design District 4, Alder District 12, consideration of a conditional use in the Regional Mixed Use RMX District and Transit Oriented Development TOD Overlay District for outdoor recreation, that being a pool, to serve a 7-story, 493-unit multifamily dwelling. And the requested action on this item is referral to our June 15th, 2026 meeting. Is there a motion and a second to refer this item? Thanks, Alder Uguerre. Thanks, Commissioner Wasniewski. Is there any objection to unanimous approval for referral of item 7? And seeing none, that item is referred. So that leaves us just one more public hearing item for our agenda tonight. So we will go to item 3 on our agenda. That's Legistar 92589. And the requested item would be approving or recommending approval of a certified survey map of property owned by Michael J. and Lisa Koch-Schuster, and with the property being located at 7021 Cottage Grove Road in Alder District 16. So we'll hear a brief presentation from Planner Parks. Welcome, Tim, and then we'll get to the public hearing.
Thank you, Chair, members of the Plan Commission. The item on your agenda, 7021 Cottage Grove Road, is a request to divide a roughly 20-acre parcel into two residential lots. The property in question is zoned agricultural, which has a 10-acre minimum lot area required for non-agricultural uses, or basically any other use in the agricultural district except agriculture. Agricultural uses are only required to have a minimum of 5 acres of lot area, but because it's a fairly restrictive district, the minimum for everything else, including residential uses, is 10 acres. Some of the members of the Plan Commission may recall that a similar request was before the body in 2023 to divide the same 20 acres into three lots. That was placed on file without prejudice because the lots did not meet the 10-acre lot area requirement of the agricultural zoning district. The applicant, Michael Schuster and Lisa Koch-Schuster, have since changed the request to create two 10-acre lots from the site. The site is unique in that it is completely landlocked. It has no road frontage of its own. It is located approximately a quarter mile south of Cottage Grove Road, a quarter mile east of existing Sprecher Road, and about a quarter mile north of County Trunk Highway AB. It is currently connected to Cottage Grove Road by an easement that was created at the time the parcel was created in 1996. The applicant is proposing two lots, which I will attempt to share on my screen if my computer will cooperate. Here we are, I hope, showing the relationship between the subject site and the proposed lots with Cottage Grove Road, which is also County Trunk Highway BB. The two 10-acre lots will have no road frontage. Staff has discussed this extensively and believe using a zoning construct that you occasionally see known as a planned multi-use site, that the two proposed lots could be created, which would be unique. Planned multi-use sites are most commonly used for parcels at large multi-use and commercial sites. Westtown Mall would be a great example of a large-scale planned multi-use site where you have streets that are framing part of the site, but a lot of parcels within that complex that are landlocked and rely on easements and cross-access agreements and things of that nature to take access. Such would be the case here. Planning and zoning staff believe that if the Schuster property at 7021, which is shown here towards the bottom of the screen image, creates a planned multi-use site with the adjacent undeveloped agriculturally zoned parcel at 7049 Cottage Grove Road, which the existing parcel currently has access over, that these two lots could be created because the three parcels together, the two proposed lots with the CSM, as well as the parcel at 7049, would be the planned multi-use site. And planned multi-use sites, as noted in the staff report, are governed by a plan and reciprocal land use agreement. The goal here is to create perpetual access for proposed lots 1 and 2 to Cottage Grove Road, And so there are numerous conditions of approval by planning, zoning, city engineering, and the mapping section to formalize the arrangement between the subject parcel and 7049 Cottage Grove so that these lots will be accessible. One other topic to raise for the commission, which is somewhat unique about this request, is the conditions that have been submitted by the fire department. As noted previously, the site is located a quarter mile off of Cottage Grove Road. That would typically make creating another lot and building another residence very difficult. However, two options have been offered by the fire department to comply with the fire code. The applicants can extend public water and install a hydrant, or they can install a fire sprinkler for any new residence that would be constructed, in this case on lot one. And so there are robust conditions related to the need to either provide water or likelier to sprinkle the future residents. And there are conditions from both planning and the fire department to that effect. Last and not least, because there's not enough to talk about on this site already, there are some significant topographical features present. There is waterway present on a portion of the site, regulatory floodway and floodplain, including 100-year floodplain, as well as attendant wetlands, all of which will need to be shown on the certified survey map if it's approved. And once we have those natural features identified, we will work with the applicant to identify where on lot one new buildings can be constructed and where on lot two any additional structures or additions to the existing residence can be located so that it's clear that those buildings will not be impacted by the natural features that are present, and vice versa, that those structures will not impact the natural features. So a fairly unique, somewhat complicated land division for the body tonight. So we are recommending approval again, subject to the comments and conditions in the staff report, and I'd be happy to answer questions following the hearing. Thank you.
Thanks, Tim. We have one registrant for that. Well, we have a registrant for this item, perhaps more than one, but I will open the public hearing on the item. And Megan, if you would lead us through the registrants.
All right, so as the chair noted, we do just have one registrant on this item. It is Michael Schuster, who is the property owner, registered in support and available to answer any questions.
Great. So while the public hearing is open, do any commissioners have questions for our registrant, the property owner? All right. Last call, and seeing no questions, we'll close the public hearing on this item, and I will offer, are there questions from the commission for staff? Alder Yeager, thanks.
I think that Planner Parks could almost anticipate my question. If there were a change at some point in the future after the CSM properly reflects the building envelopes that are necessary to avoid impacting the topographical features that you mentioned, there was some reason why it should change. How would an owner go about changing the building envelope?
Sorry, I have to chuckle for a moment because Alder Yeager is expertly bringing this topic up because of something very similar but completely unrelated on the other side of town. And these building setback lines that would form the building envelope on the Schuster property would be restrictions for public benefit, which are governed by Section 236.293 of Wisconsin statutes, which is the subdivision regulations. And we also have language to that effect in our own subdivision ordinance, that in order to modify the building envelopes that would be created, for whatever reason, they need to get bigger, they need to get smaller, some other issue has come about that requires someone to want to build beyond those lines, that would require a resolution of the Common Council following a review by the Plan Commission to modify or release that restriction for public benefit. In this case, we would be, with the certified survey map approval, trying to specify who would have enforcement power over that language. Typically, it would be a combination of planning, building inspection, / zoning. Sometimes the city engineer, depending on what the restriction for public benefit is for. But that would be placed on the certified survey map, become part of the title for these two lots. And if there were need for change for those in the future, it would take a resolution of the Common Council, as well as a real estate project administered by the Office of Real Estate Services to modify those building setback lines.
So could that be, that sounds like an arduous process, Tim. Could it be done with a submission in conjunction with the submission for a change in the CSM, a new CSM?
That could be part of the resolution that would approve that subsequent land division, that there would be a resolved clause added to that resolution to approve the CSM that allowed for changes. But actually, those restrictions for public benefit are on the property in the form that they were created until there's a subsequent instrument recorded that modifies or releases those. And because it's a restriction that was required by the public, in this case, the city of Madison, it would require a resolution of the governing body to approve that modification or release.
Thank you, Tim.
Alder Figueroa.
Thank you. I don't know when you were talking about envelopes, what you meant, but I'm a little bit rusty here. So that line there labeled as L19, L18, L17 in the picture that you were showing earlier, is that the actual road?
That, to my understanding, is the road. The language that was put in place when the subject parcel was created, which is, there's an excerpt in the staff report, talks about the road as it existed at the time. So it's a little fuzzy, but the surveyor that prepared the certified survey map located the road and sort of extrapolated that that is where the easement that was created in 1996 exists.
So what happens with that little piece of land that is cutting through what appears to be the road? On the lot one, you had that little chunk of land to the corner there. Is that a develop? Is that enough? Is enough land to develop anything in it?
Referring to the portion of lot one,
yes.
That's one of the things that we'll have to confirm once we have the information on wetlands, floodplains, and floodway. That we can overlay onto the existing parcel boundary and proposed lots to determine where, taking all of that information into consideration, where on lot one there would be buildable space.
I was just going to address an earlier part of your question, Alder, about the building envelope essentially means that there would be a mapped area where buildings could be located on the property when taking into account all of the other wetlands, topography, wooded areas, et cetera. So yeah, it might look something like what Tim is doing with this cursor right now.
Yeah.
So doesn't necessarily mean that the entire lots are buildable at this point. We don't know.
Correct.
That
yet.
And let's say, let's just, best case scenario, the entire, both lots are fully buildable. Then a plan will exist to develop then the road access to connect to this main road within that redevelopment.
I think Imagine
you can fit multiple lots, you know, multiple houses here, I suppose, or whatever structures.
That is what we will need the applicant working with the adjacent property owner to firm up. Right now, there's a somewhat nebulous easement that extends over a driveway that comes off of Cottage Grove Road and leads back to the existing 20-acre parcel. But that, you know, isn't created. So there's different degrees of agreements and easements that you can put in place to govern, in this case, shared access to multiple properties, including parcels that, you know, don't have their own access to roads. And one is a separate easement document that, you know, pretty specifically spells out the duties and responsibilities of the grantor and the grantee of the easement. Might have very good detailed information about the width and the various bearings and distances. You have at the other end of the spectrum, almost like the equivalent of a handshake agreement, that of course you can use the driveway to get to your property, and there's no governance over it beyond just that sort of quote unquote handshake agreement. What we have with the deed that created the Schuster parcel about 30 years ago is something that's a little more in the middle, that says you can have access to 7021 over 7049 following the road that's there, and not really taking into account what the width is, who's responsible for maintaining it, the fact that roads can move with time, not like, you know, significant distances, but, you know, the land on which a gravel road, for example, can, you know, erode away. Sometimes, you know, there's a hump that gets filled with some, you know, a couple of yards of gravel. But it's not super well defined, but there's clearly something in a recorded document that says 7021 has access over 7049. What we need in this case, in order to formalize the access for the two proposed lots over this neighboring property, is to make it more that first example where there is a recorded document that's been approved by the city that says how wide the easement will be, what it will be constructed of, who will maintain it, you know, in terms of responsibilities, you know, do parties need to carry insurance, things like that. It's going to be a much more defined document, because what we are trying to avoid, and the one thing with a planned multi-use site that we have to be, you know, particularly in tuned to, is, you know, that those landlocked parcels that are requiring other properties for access or for utility connections, whatever, sometimes stormwater management, whatever the circumstances are, that they're not being quite literally cut off, because the agreement that allows for that landlocking in this case to be expanded by the creation of a second lot, a second dwelling, that they will have access to Cottage Grove Road, that public service providers, in particular public safety providers, will have access to the property for whatever need in the future. So that's why we're proposing to firm things up.
And to be clear, I think the proposal here is to create one additional lot for one additional single family residence. This is property that's zoned agricultural and, as noted in the staff report, does not have access to city services. So we are not at this time envisioning that this would open up the opportunity for further land division to create smaller lots. The zoning requires 10-acre minimum lot sizes, and I believe within the agricultural district, only single-family residences are permitted. So maybe, you know, an ADU if that's permissible. But so what we're talking about here is really creating one additional lot that needs that consideration for access, as well as the existing lot that has that sort of mid-tier clarity about how access is granted today.
Thank you. So, I mean, like I view CSM as an imaginary line that doesn't create much harm, especially in dense areas. But here, like, I'm still unclear on, maybe I missed something on the report or on the resolution itself. How do we go from this imaginary line to actually have the conditions to ensure that the lot farther from access to the road has access, you know, in the future? Is that part of the CSM process itself? Is that what you guys are trying to translate here? Like, it's not just the CSM, yes, the CSM with the conditions of these ISMAs and things like that. Is that what we are approving today?
Yes.
Yeah, and is the owner,
there would then, be,
is the owner, like, they already agree to this type of conditions, or how does that? I mean, I didn't ask any questions of the owner because honestly, I needed to speak with you guys first, so I didn't know what to ask. So is there any conflict on that regard from the owner to make the division with those conditions?
Not that we're aware. Okay. I have had some email exchanges with the owner, and they're registered available to answer questions. So I certainly would encourage the Plan Commission, if they're so inclined, to reopen the hearing to ask Mr. Schuster if he has questions or concerns about the conditions. But I think if he did, I certainly would hope he would have registered to speak so that we could have addressed those, or, you know, certainly raised those before the meeting. The report was provided Thursday evening, so we've had a couple business days since.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very particular lot, so it doesn't look common whatsoever. So you guys, thank you for answering my questions.
Calder, any other questions for staff? Commissioner Bazin.
I just want to clarify what I think I heard is that there will be a map that will help identify where buildings can go, and there won't be any adverse environmental impacts from an additional building being on the land.
That's the goal. We have, if you want, I can, you know, dig up a few map layers and show you where those natural features are. It's my expectation that there is land within the, you know, northeastern quadrant of the 20 acres because the existing residence on the property is sitting on high ground. There's also some steep land. So this is the existing house is sitting quite a bit above the wetlands, floodway, and floodplain. And so we would expect that there would be space, you know, kind of similarly on that ridge, maybe a little bit northwest of the house on proposed lot one, where the home would be built. There certainly would be no permits allowed for a home or accessory structures closer to the natural features.
Thank you.
Any more questions? If not, we close the public hearing. So I think we would be ready to consider a motion if commission is so inclined. Commissioner Solheim.
Thank you. I'll move that the Plan Commission find the approval criteria met
for the proposed land division and recommend approval of the two-lot CSM at 7021 Cottage Grove Road, subject to the conditions outlined in the staff report.
Thanks. Is there a second? Commissioner Sanders, thank you. Any discussion on the motion? So, yeah, I think we appreciate Tim and the detailed record for us to consider that there's a lot of nuance in this area. Without any further discussion, we'll call the vote. Is there any objection to unanimous approval for this item? Seeing no hands, the item is approved. So thank you. That concludes our numbered agenda items. We do have time for member announcements, communications, and business items. Does anyone have anything they'd like to share? Seeing none, we'll take time for our secretary's report. Megan, you have the floor.
All right, thank you, Chair. A couple items here on recent council actions and upcoming matters that I just wanted to note for you. The first is under recent actions, the appeal that we informed you about for the conditional use approval for 5555 Odana Road and 5534 Medical Circle. This was scheduled to be heard by the Common Council at their meeting last Tuesday and was ultimately withdrawn by the appellants, and therefore the council did not discuss this appeal. The appellants did submit a letter as part of their withdrawal outlining their concerns about the project in general and ultimately asking for a broader conversation about some of those issues. So if you're interested, you can read that on Legistar, and please feel free to reach out if you have any questions about that. As far as upcoming meetings, we continue to hold space for the pending annual meeting to elect a chair and vice chair and appoint a member to the Joint Campus Area Committee. We will do that when we have received any of the resident member appointments from the Common Council and the Mayor's Office. We're still waiting for that. So thank you to the existing members who continue to serve in their capacity until we know more about those appointments or reappointments. We'll keep you posted when we know more about when that will occur. And then looking ahead to your June 15th meeting, just wanted to flag that we will see the Southeast and Southwest area plans come back before the Plan Commission as part of the referral process for their consideration of adoption by the Common Council later in June. And then the one meeting that is not on here that the chair mentioned at the top is your special meeting on June 11th. So the chair and I will be working to finalize the agenda for that meeting, drawing from topics that we talked about at your last special meeting and included on the work plan. But we'll likely include some updates on research we've been doing around data centers and a few other policy topics that we've been working on as well. We'll be sharing soon an update for you. Also, if you are interested in joining for a public meeting, we will be hosting for the a data center discussion as well in early June. Please look out for that on your email. I think that's all I have for tonight, Chair.
Great, thanks. Thanks, Megan. Any questions for the director? Alder Figueroa Cole.
Hey, Megan, as part of the data center discussion, do we have any rules that you can point me to for rules regarding facilities like the one potentially proposed? I think it's in the Oscar Mayer area, I'm not sure, for the nuclear fusion facility. Mm. Do we have any question on that, or is that associated? You know, are those things closer related?
Yeah, great question. I'm going to look to Tim if he's still listening in to see if he has thoughts about general. We have specific regulations that you know of in our code related to nuclear fusion, or if we would likely treat that under our general industrial and in general industrial use.
I can look. It's not something that comes up very often, but we know that there is a reactor down on campus, kind of small scale. But I don't recall specifically how that's regulated under zoning.
Yeah. So we can also get back to you on that, Alder, after this meeting, if Tim can't find it right off the bat here.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It almost feels like you're already doing research on the data centers, trying to group some of that in. I know that we gave you a specific task, but but that's also playing around, and the more information we have, the better. Anyhow, and I'm sorry, I know this is not a question. I should have made that on the comments, but I couldn't get raising my hand. So I do have one announcement. Just want to say thank you so very much to all the staff that participated on the Housing Week this year, and especially to Commissioner Derek. I'm not going to say your last name, W. Because I know he was kind of, as part of his role from the ARP, he was one of the top leaders pushing those efforts. So I'm looking forward for next year again. And if you guys, commissioners, haven't participated on these things, you missed out. Please keep an eye for the next year event. So thank you, guys. Appreciate the collaboration.
Thanks, Holler, for your role call. Thanks. And thanks, Darren. All right. Planner Parks.
I didn't want to fail at the quiz. So a quick spin through the zoning code online. Didn't turn up nuclear right away, but we do have regulations in section 28.133 of the zoning code entitled Environmental Protection Standards. Parent 2, parent C, regarding fissionable non-fissile material, which is allowed in zoning districts other than the industrial general district when such use is accessory to a principal use allowed within the zoning district and when licensed or registered as required by state or federal law. And then we have language immediately following regarding fissile material being limited to 1 gram only in the industrial general district and only when not less than 300 feet of a boundary of any other zoning district. So we don't have a lot about where precisely it would be allowed, but we do have some information in the zoning code regarding fissile material and non-fissile material, and the non-fissile material being fissionable. But that's right in there with explosives and productive processes and things like that under a section referred to as activities, which may be potential hazards or nuisances.
So we'll work with zoning to get a more a less on-the-fly response for you, Alder.
That's very generous. Thank you.
Thank you, Tim.
Thank you, guys. Didn't mean to put you on the spot. It's something that has been in my mind for a while, so I run with it. Thank you.
Thanks.
Not a bad time for it. Unless folks have questions, I think we can move. I can ask for a motion and a second to adjourn our meeting. Alder Figueroa Cole. Thank you. Is there a second? Commissioner Solheim, thank you. Any objection to unanimous approval? Seeing none, we will stand adjourned and we'll see everybody on June 1st. Thanks.
Thank you. Have a good night.